Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Yo, what's up? No.
Yo, what's up? It's a podcast.
That's good.
I love this so much.
Yo.
Where's Trevor in the house?
Oh, God.
Where's Robert?
Yeah, I know. We need Robert to come in strong right now. Oh, wait. He's not here.
Welcome back to the worst year ever, folks. We are here today without Robert Evans, but we have me, Katie Stoll.
It's true, as ever and always. And Cody Johnston is the name of the second person on the podcast.
Okay, weirdo.
And who else is here today?
Whoa.
What?
Hi, I am, and this is Garrison. I'm filling in for Robert, who is otherwise predisposed at the moment.
What?
Otherwise predisposed makes him sound like he's on the toilet.
It does.
Yeah, he is. Look,
that's a very polite bathroom excuse.
Yep.
He's just gotten so much food poisoning the past month. It's just been a real issue.
Well, he's been pounding ivermectin, so he's shitting out his own heart.
Oh, yeah.
What do you expect?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Oh, my goodness.
The job requires a lot of extensive research sometimes, and it has consequences.
Yeah, exactly. You have to, you know,
taking it for the team.
Put yourself out there. Put yourself in there.
Team America. So today,
speaking of America,
yeah,
the nation,
the state,
oh.
The nation state. We're gonna speak of America, the nation and the state today.
We do indeed speak of America.
Today at towards the end of the episode, we have a really great interview for you guys. With a very lovely young woman named Olga, who is here to talk to us about the potential strike in IATSE, which is the, you know, overarching union for, everybody in the entertainment industry outside of actors and writers.
So was it International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees?
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yeah!
Got it,
Cody. Looking at our Zoom and not at that acronym, but it's a great interview. Stick around for that. Before we get there, we're going to shoot the shit, and we're going to talk about some goddamn news.
Yeah, we're going to splatter the shit on the walls.
That sounds like us.
You want to start by talking about what? Sophie, you said Newsom.
Yeah. Garrison, do you want to talk to us about all this voter fraud stuff going on with the really fun California recall, which by the time this episode airs, we may or
it's
may
done.
Not know results.
It'll be done.
We should.
We probably won't know results yet. I mean, there's a decent chance, but
I mean, Cody hasn't cast his vote yet.
Yeah, Cody hasn't voted yet.
They have to wait for
yet.
Me to vote.
Yeah,
I have hours.
The counters are waiting on Cody still.
Exactly.
So as soon as this gets wrapped up, then they'll be able to know. But yeah, as we're recording this is the election deadline for the California recall. And I've just spent the past week watching old Larry Elder stuff and doing research into the recall. It's a nightmare. And you know, the thing that we all suspected is going to happen, and what is happening, is Fox News the past month, ever since like mid-August, has been prepping election fraud claims if Elder loses, because Elder was at kind of ahead in the polls in the beginning of August, and then, you know, everyone mobilized to create ads saying that he's a bad dude. So then polls have flipped, and now it's looking like, you know, Newsom will probably stay in office. Probably we'll see.
I mean,
but what they're doing in response is that now they're now trying to get everyone all riled up to say that, you know, there's election fraud, the mail-in ballots, blah 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 blah, all the same stuff from last year. They're just doing it again. And they're setting the stage for just having this same claim be used now in every election whenever the Republicans lose, right? That's what they're preparing for. So we're going to do this same circle again and again.
It's
not
time,
great.
It's going to be great.
Always.
Just real quick, this is going to happen over and over and over again, like you say, until the end of time. That's great. We love it. One thing that we could not do is have like reporters constantly ask these people.
Yeah, like seems like a bad thing.
Like just maybe like if when you're reporters like, will you accept the election results? What do you think they're going to say? Why are you asking this person? You know, let's not give them the chance to do this.
Same thing.
They're
when reporters
secretly hoping they'll say no. That's why they're asking. They want a story that they can print.
Same thing when reporters ask Trump about QAnon. You're like, you don't ask him that. There's no reason to do it. You're just making it worse. It's the same thing. Yeah.
No matter what answer he gives, it's going to be bad.
Yeah, like there's no good solution to this. Like it's not, they're not going to say a good thing.
Whenever I hear more stories or you know, just people saying like a fraud or yeah, they cheated, all this stuff, I'm like, you guys never read The Boy Who Cried Wolf, did you?
The thing is, it doesn't matter.
I know it doesn't matter, but it does.
It matters to us, but for the people who believe in it, it doesn't. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's
it's not fun,
Garrison. Hoping that you were gonna come on this show and give us something positive to chew on, and instead you bring this.
I do have something positive for later, but this can start. And I know last weekend Elder set up this whole website online.
Okay,
Cody, do you wanna talk about the website?
It's just fine. It's sure. I love it. It's amazing. I can't believe it exists already. It seems like a thing that they had planned and ready to go, and they just like accidentally published it early.
Accidentally.
So he has his website, and if you go, it's like a report fraud link, and it goes to this other place. That claims it had already detected fraud.
Detected
fraud in the results of the California recall election, resulting in Governor Gavin Newsom being reinstated as governor. And I don't know if anyone else was listening to Garrison earlier, because it was mentioned that the election's not over.
No.
It's today, as was pointed out. Also, I have not voted yet. So how do they have these results?
You have to be removed first.
Also true. Also, that's weird. Yeah.
Like, they literally can't start counting votes until today.
Cody votes.
There's
Cody votes.
Actually, they cannot count votes until the 14th. So there's no way to detect fraud already because there's no one's counted votes yet.
Right.
But they use Benford's law. Don't worry. It means it's legit. I can't believe this. Like, it's just it's just so slapdash and incompetent. But also, like, part of it's like, is it incompetent? Or they just do it early because they know it doesn't matter? Because it does not matter.
No, they're setting this up. Like, Elder has been on Fox News a lot the past week plugging this site. He plugged the site at a rally a few days ago. Like, he's talked about it. Like, he's wanting people to talk about it, right? We're talking about it now, which is maybe, you know.
Well, of course, it's good publicity. That's the last ditch way of riling people up. You saying that there's already been instances of voter fraud? Well, that should get them out of their houses and voting on election day.
Yeah, it's not great. You know, Tucker's talking about it every day on Fox News. They have a segment on it. It's going to be like this forever. This is just how things are now because of what happened on January 6th. Like, I guess we can do that again if we just keep trying. So now we're just doing this. So, yep. I love elections.
I love elections. What else do we want to discuss here right now?
How much we love elections? How much do we love elections? You want to talk about the dress? You want to talk about the Met Gala?
Ooh, let's talk.
You
want to
talk about the most torturous fucking bullshit?
What is the Met Gala?
Gala. I don't know. Metropolitan.
Does anyone know? Does anyone know what the Met Gala is?
All I know is Vogue magazine's involved and Anna Wintour.
Yeah, it's like an event. It's like
it's a fundraiser, I believe.
Like
let's all just
shit,
make our
right?
best guess
know.
While I...
Yeah, what is the...
The Met.
I've only been to the Met once. It was on a high school field trip, and we were watching an opera, and I left during intermission to get high, and I came back, and it was...
I've got the answer.
The snow, they had fake snow in the second act, and it was beautiful. It was the sets were amazing.
So, do you
okay,
have,
here,
do you
I've
have
got
the,
something.
Yeah, do you have the
description?
Yeah,
so the Met is, as I assumed, the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Mm-hmm. And according to a quick Google search, what is the purpose of the Met Gala? Affectionately referred to as fashion's biggest night out, the Met Gala 2021 is a fundraising benefit for the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. The event welcomes stars, young creatives, and industry paragons. I did read that as industry pagans in my head, and I wish
We wish.
We need to celebrate more industry pagans.
That's Google. Yeah, it's one of the regular events of the year where everybody loses their mind over the ridiculous dresses that nobody should be wearing but are. Yeah.
People seem to share a lot of like old like dresses from like other like years and like, oh my God, look at this. And it's like, that's from like 5 years ago. Do we do this every year now?
I mean, right now they're comparing Hailee Steinfeld with her current look with her old look. And I'll accept that as reason to. I don't care. I don't give a fuck. I just shouldn't sit here pretending like I do.
There are a few standouts. James Corden's tux was magnificent. Just a beautiful, beautiful sculpted man in that black tux. Amazing. But you know, the main thing people are talking about is AOC's tax the rich dress. I don't care about this at all, but some people on Twitter evidently do.
Well, there's been a lot of misinformation about it. They're like, I feel like she's...
Or people just making assumptions.
People making assumptions.
AOC didn't buy herself a ticket to the Met Gala. She was given a ticket to the Met Gala. And AOC decided to go there and use it as an opportunity to make a statement.
Which she did.
You know, and she did that. At the other end of it, she should be aware that a lot of the people that got her into office already feel like she maybe isn't the person that they originally thought her to be, and that some people found this to be flip in certain ways and superficial. I don't know. Cody, jump in.
I mean, I don't care enough about this, but it is like, yeah, it's a little flip. It's a little, I've seen a lot of people like, well, now Tax the Rich is trending on Twitter. So clearly the message worked. And it's like, I don't know. To me, people already want to tax the rich. It is a very popular policy proposal.
Tax the Rich trends on Twitter.
Pretty regularly. She didn't make anybody at the Met Gala like uncomfortable because she's among them, and it's sort of like commodifying this sort of like
also elected. So
like it's like selling socialism in a capitalist way to like be like, look at my. I don't know. It just commodifies it in a weird way. Also, there's a Black Lives Matter protest right outside.
Yeah,
and they got brutalized by the police. Yeah
peaceful
exactly.
protest and the cops were
about
shady.
Police brutality.
Wow. Yeah, what a shock. But no, but she's not. The people were reacting like
she didn't spend $30,000 on a ticket.
Well, it's
and
not
she
even
didn't
that.
Pay for her dress.
Politicians get invited to that event every year and attend. She was one of many that were there that night. But like Garrison said, I don't care. She doesn't care.
There is one thing I do care about is that so someone was wearing a Peg the Patriarchy thing, which is kind of a little bit whatever. I don't care about that either. What I do care about is just today, Ben Shapiro did a whole segment on this, and he describes pegging as quote an obscure sexual practice in which women perform the more aggressive sexual act on men, and I think it's pretty funny.
It's not obscure.
It is extremely funny.
But I just like that we now have Ben Shapiro talking about pegging. So.
Yeah, he also described the outfit as it's like scantily clad.
Uh-huh.
I was like, Ben, like,
there's not
you go outside?
Clad.
What are you talking about?
Come on, man.
It's like the Simpsons thing of the guy covering his eyes.
Right, yeah. It's like, my freaking ears. I did see that. It's very funny that he every so often has to talk about things that make him so deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
He really didn't have to. It does not matter.
No, it does not matter. But he was, of course, he was going to talk about it. I have one parting thought on AOC. I also don't care, but perhaps care slightly more than you guys. Because then I think, like, what would I have chosen to do if I was offered that? Because, it sounds very exciting to get invited. But I'm not AOC, and I don't represent, you know, I'm not.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's not like.
And if I was going to go, I like that she, you know, if she's going to go, I like that she did what she did, but also feels a little bit PR movie. So it sits slightly funny with me, but I don't hate her for it. And part of me thinks that the little girl in me would have loved it, you know?
Sure.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah. Sure. But also, yeah, like you're not.
People are going to make fun of me for that.
I don't know. Like. I understand everyone's opinion about it, and no one will talk about it in a day, and she will continue to do stuff like this that enrages people, and it's, you know, there is a bit of, a packaging that I think is kind of not necessarily helpful or...
I agree.
...genuine that, you know, I don't love it. But,
the commodification's a really good point, just how we've seen a lot of these kind of ideas that used to be more radical, as they get mainstream, they get very, watered down and turned into things that they didn't originally represent. And we see this a lot with, you know, even to some degree with how popular Bernie got. But then again, a lot of people who call themselves socialists or communists or anarchists wouldn't have gotten to that point if it weren't for someone like Bernie in the first place.
Right.
So that is,
that's very well said, Garrison.
But yeah, having that, you know, it sort of waters down this sort of revolutionary aspect of a lot of these allegedly revolutionary aspect of it. Like there was even a moment where she was talking the red carpet or whatever, where she's talking about how we need to you know, it's an important issue and we need to, I forget the exact phrase, but we need to bring you know, all classes into this conversation. About what to do and stuff. And to me, it's no, we don't. We need to ignore a very specific class and let one actually speak. And it's very inclusive. We need to bring all classes together. What?
Right.
No,
it's
we don't.
The evolution of her as a politician. It kind of feels represented in this decision to go. I mean, I keep thinking about it. I don't think that I would have done it if I was her. I just really
don't.
Well,
it seems
think-
like the, yeah, this kind of thing where she was probably I really want to go, but if I go, then it'll look like this. So
I should wear something.
Exactly.
It's I think that it's just not the best look, but also, yes, people were misinterpreting and saying the wrong things about it.
The one other thing that actually in AOC news today, her and a few other more progressive Congress people are trying to introduce an amendment to block the delivery of U.S.-made bombs into Israel, and that just got announced today.
Well, that's
they've been.
I mean, yeah, because there's just going to be always going to be a split between here's what the media is obsessing over and talking about, and here's what they're actually doing, for their jobs. I don't know, it's.
Yeah,
it is what it is. She
we
is who she
talk
is, and
about
but also I will
else.
Say, we will. I absolutely agree. We totally should. I will say it's the kind of thing where you know, I've seen a lot of if Bernie went and he did that, you'd love it, and it's well, he wouldn't do that.
No,
he
wouldn't.
I mean, I just had that same thought. I was like, if Bernie would Bernie go? No, he just wouldn't.
He wouldn't and it wouldn't even
There's
be
no
like
part
I'm
of his
I
ego
a,
that would
principle.
Want,
yeah. I don't want to go. He'd just be like, I don't. Do that
why
shit. What's the point it's that interview he did with the New York Times where he was talking about birthday cards for people and he's I just don't do that bullshit. I'm not a bullshitter. I'm not gonna bullshit you just so you write a nice thing about me. But whatever, we don't need to talk about it ever again.
Politicians aren't role models. I think
it's time for an ad or our friends.
Yeah, or friends.
You know who are our friends?
The products and services that
the
sponsor
the products
this?
And services that you
And we are back.
Nice. Thanks, friends, for introducing all the products and services to the listeners.
Before we get to the interview that we've already teased once, we're going to talk of a real quick combo about supply chain stuff.
Is it going well?
No. It's going great.
Oh, good. Yes. Okay.
We're doing good. Everything's opened up. Everyone's healthy.
Segment over.
Shipping containers are going from place to place, and that's it.
No problem. Hell yeah. Then.
Got enough chips?
Got chips. You got all your car parts.
Okay, yep. Let's say that everything you just said wasn't true.
Oh no, wait. I just
what would that look like?
I just got a text message from the head of UPS.
Oh, shit.
Saying that we need to buy all of our Christmas presents now because otherwise we're not going to get anything in December because the supply chains are actually getting clogged. Oh, no. Oh, dang.
Anecdotally, I bought some K95 masks from a month and a half ago. And they are just waiting at you as UPS or USPS, wherever they are, not moving. Anyway, let's talk about supply chain.
That's fun. I mean, there's a lot of different shortages happening. One of the big ones is this chip shortage for vehicles that's affecting not just the new vehicle market, but also used and also the rental car market. And it looks like it's not going to get better anytime soon. Mm.
That's the thing about supply chains I'm learning.
It turns out we've made a system that is like a big Jenga tower, and every little thing relies on something else working. So if one part goes missing, then it all falls apart. And that's a nice way to make things.
That sounds reasonable.
And if like,
who could have thought of that? Who could have predicted
fair
that?
Fair enough. And if, like me, you went and looked at for a car over the weekend and there was none to look at, I am so sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm so glad I got my car when I did.
To both.
I mean, all of it.
Both. Yeah. It's bad. Yeah. And the markup on vehicles right now for new and certified pre-owned or whatever they're calling it, whatever jargon, I don't know car words. The prices suck. The markup, they're marking up prices really high because there's no supply.
Yeah, it's a supply and demand thing. I mean, this is happening because of how many little specific things are needed to make so many different products. Especially when they rely on like chips or any kind of computer parts, it just makes stuff impossible to build because you're missing too many important things. Like Toyota is making, I think they said like 40% less.
I'm sorry, Gare, how did
vehicles.
You just pronounce the name of that car?
You said
company?
Toyota.
I really liked it.
Yeah,
you said Toyota. It's Toyota.
I really enjoyed it. Garrison doesn't know how to pronounce words.
Katie, this is a very funny
That is the Canadian. That is the Canadian way of saying it.
That was wonderful for my soul. Thank you.
But yeah, they're making like 40% less cars this year. A lot of other automakers based in Japan or based in Asia are making a whole lot less because of just how many ports are closed in Asia still because they're trying to control spread of the Delta variant and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And also that specifically in the situation of chips manufacturing at the beginning of the pandemic, big corporations and these companies take a gamble, make a guess about how much you should produce based on what's happening globally. And you're like, well, I don't know. We should probably scale back so we're not wasting money. And and then here we are with a shortage.
Yeah,
that's going to take that to counteract takes – you know, years to make up the difference that has been lost. And like currently,
and
which company you have hangers full of cars that can't be finished because you can't get the chip in there.
Yeah. And cars are not the only thing that are.
No, this is across. And this should also, I mean, we talked about some of this stuff a little bit with Chelsea Manning a few weeks ago about supply chain issues that we're going to start seeing. And it absolutely is not just cars and stuff. It's everything.
Yeah.
It's our food supply. It's coffee. Also, coffee, another thing that we've talked about is, how global warming, how climate change is affecting our crops and crop production. And coffee is about to get really expensive and harder to come by.
Yeah, it's also
it's
also paper. There's a huge paper shortage right now, and it's affecting our school supplies. Apparently, I was reading about that this morning. But yeah, the summary is that there's a labor shortage, there's a product shortage, and there doesn't seem to be any awesome structural timeline for when this will be fixed.
Food.
Maybe this
food
is how
general.
We abolish cars.
Abolish cars.
Yeah, that's
how
more
would I?
That's more optimistic. You wouldn't.
Cody, how would I drive to the poll to vote if I hadn't voted?
See, there you go.
Which
you
I have to. Voted, but somebody here has not.
Who's that? What are you talking about?
You. It's you.
But I will have been a person who has voted.
Send a selfie. I want proof. No selfie, no vote. Gosh. That's a
I'll
joke.
Show you this. I'll show you the fucking sticker.
For legal reasons, do not. It might not be. Is it legal in California to take a selfie when you vote? I don't know. There's certain states where that is illegal, which is.
I'll bring a bunch of bottled water. Such and a pass useless it out law. And see what happens.
Yeah. Anyways, is there anything else we want to add on the shortage care?
I mean, that's
pretty much it. That's pretty much it. There's a shortage. It sucks. There's a shortage on a lot of things.
Labor, everything. Everything is a stacked Jenga tower, and it's all going down.
And products are expensive.
And the walls come crumbling down. And I think that it just keeps saying that over again, right?
Yeah, and like
Garrison doesn't know he's too young.
Nope.
Nobody knows.
I don't.
Nobody knows that I'm quoting a song. Okay.
No idea.
Yeah. Cut it out or leave it in. I don't care.
Double it. Do it twice.
All right. This is the point in the show where I do a third plug for our interview, which is coming up next.
Welcome to the worst year ever.
Okay, so as we probably set up in the intro that we haven't recorded yet, today we have the pleasure of sitting down and chatting with Olga Lexell, who I'm going to redo that. Did I pronounce your last name right?
You're the only person who's ever pronounced it correctly.
Oh, I just got in my head.
Keep it in.
keep all of this in, Daniel. I did it well. Olga, who is a writer's assistant and a script coordinator, and she is here today to talk to us about what is going on with the IATSE and the potential strike that's coming up. First, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for wanting to know more.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, we live in Los Angeles, so perhaps my feed is abnormally filled with conversations about this, but I'm pretty sure that our listeners have caught wind of it at some point. And if they haven't, they should, and they will definitely care about what we have to talk about today. So to start, why don't you just tell us what IATSE is, what it stands for, and yeah, we'll start there.
Yeah, absolutely. So IATSE is the...
IATSE, I like that.
I know some people pronounce it Yahtzee though, and that's weird.
Yeah.
But IATSE is essentially the largest union in entertainment, and it represents basically almost all rank and file in the production world. I think most people usually, when they think of unions, think of like the WGA, the DGA. Mm-hmm. IATSE is like the less glamorous younger brother of those unions. We have like the fewest, I think, multimillionaires of any union mm-hmm. in the industry, but we do have, you know, the folks making minimum wage. Basically anybody you meet on a set, especially in LA, is going to be a member of IATSE.
Yeah, it's pretty vital. Obviously LA is known to be as being the entertainment industry, and talks about the WGA or SAG negotiations are always pretty front and center in the mainstream media, but this is vital. These are the people that actually do the really hard, intensive labor, the truly back-breaking labor, of which there is a lot that goes into making the stuff that we consume.
And just as an example, not every IATSE local and craft would strike. It's only folks who are part of the basic agreement, which is a contract that was created, but that includes props, grips, crafty, first aid, cinematographers, sound, some assistant editors, costumes, makeup, hair, electricians, writer's assistants, script supervisors. It's like everybody.
Yeah. So to be clear, almost everybody. Do you have like the union? So IATSE is like the individual unions within that.
Kind of. So IATSE is known as the international, is kind of the big body that represents different locals. And there's different locals operating in different regions. For example, I'm a member of IATSE 871, which represents writer's assistants in Los Angeles. But if you're a writer assistant in New York, you're not represented by 871. Mm. At the same time, you know, here in Atlanta, people who in LA would have been in 871 are in 161. So mm-hmm. there's tons of different locals. Like there's some that have stronger affiliations with the greater international, and there's some that don't. It really depends on state laws wherever yeah. these productions are happening.
But from what I'm reading, if this strike were to take place, and we're going to get into the specifics of it, this would be the first industry-wide strike in the union's history.
Yeah, so it's pretty massive. Never gone on strike, which is wild to think about. Because yeah. you know, the WGA has obviously gone on strike multiple times, and it's a much smaller union.
And again, more high profile, so they get away with that. This is totally. These are the people that get taken advantage of.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool because I feel like when the WGA went on strike, my memories are of like celebrity writers being
yeah.
on. Whereas I don't think anybody in IATSE is really a huge celebrity. I guess the
not GPs, yet.
Maybe.
Wait, but. Wait till this podcast drops.
Oh.
Okay. All right. So where we're at right now is that the current contract deal expired on September 10th. And so now it's expired. People are working under expired contracts. But according to what I understand is the most recent communications, the two sides are still very far apart. And I know that you're not allowed to talk about everything that's happening right now. But I would love to hear about what's happening, whatever you can share. And then let's talk about what you guys are asking for.
Yeah, totally. I think this has been a really unique process. I only joined IATSE a couple years ago, and I haven't been through a negotiation. But from what I've heard, this is the first time that multiple locals have all come together to negotiate like this, which mm-hmm. gives us bigger leverage, you know? So instead of like, oh, we're the writer's assistants and we're going to go on strike if you don't give us a raise, we're like, no, we're going to go on strike with the grips and everybody else yeah. together. So I think it's really cool. It's been great to see other people have our backs. It's every local in IATSE kind of has its own things that we deal with. Like, you know, grips tend to make more money in the union, like $40 an hour or more, whereas writer's assistants make $16 an hour. Yeah, but writer's assistants, for example, don't necessarily work 12-hour days on set. They aren't necessarily doing like hard labor on set, mm-hmm. which a lot of other locals might be. So it's been really interesting to see all the different components of these negotiations. And the stuff that is kind of more publicly discussed is a need for reasonable rest is a big one.
So let's break some of these down as we go, because I think that's really important and to not blow through reasonable rest. And I think what most people don't understand when you're watching your TV shows is what a day on set looks like. And under the current rules, I mean, we're talking 12-hour days plus overtime of people being on their feet. If you are a camera operator, you're carrying a heavy, heavy piece of equipment that does long-term damage to your body. You know, same with the grips. Everybody, you're not having – and then if you go – there's just – a standard, and it's accepted that you pack as much as you can into these days, and if you don't make your page count, you go into overtime. And what that does is that doesn't give you enough of a turnaround for a lot of people. They go home, they don't have time to properly rest before coming back to work.
And the crazy thing is the 12-hour workday in the industry has been a standard for so long that now people basically factor in the penalties for violating it into their budget. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So for example, we have meal penalties. If you don't get the meal break when you're supposed to, the production has to pay a penalty. Now you have a lot of producers who set up their budget assuming we're not going to have meals and we're just going to eat that. And when you have studios with infinite money, they can do that.
right.
But yeah,
it's just a small price, but they're not factoring in the human cost.
Totally. I know in my union, for example, script supervisors who track continuity between shots, one of the most essential jobs on a set for yeah. editing. I know one big issue we've been having is there's a new type of schedule called the French hour where you only shoot for 10 hours. And instead of having a big break in the middle of the day for lunch, people take rolling breaks. So mm-hmm. we'll have a group of people eat at 11 and then at 12 and then at 1. But the script supervisors are stuck in their chair as long as the camera's rolling. So oh. when there's no break, they don't get to eat because they have to be constantly tracking what's happening in the shot. So reasonable rest and meal breaks have been a big thing for those folks in yeah. my opinion.
Yeah, I'm sure that this is complicated, keeping in mind, you know, negotiating something that's beneficial to this group of people. And then also, you know, the gaffers and the script supervisors coming to the table at the same time and trying to negotiate on everybody's behalf makes it really complicated.
Little things that we don't think about. There's a great Instagram account called IA_stories. That's all people in IATSE talking about what they've experienced on set. And I was reading something from a sound person who talked about developing like a chronic bladder failure condition from holding yeah. it in, not being able to go to the bathroom because, you know, nobody's going to stop and wait for you to take a break.
It's inhumane.
It's totally inhumane. People have horrible physical problems because of this stuff.
Yeah. There's a cultural aspect to this industry specifically mm-hmm. with regards to that, because in a lot of people's mind, like, you know, you're making something, you're making a movie or a show, and like, that's the important thing. And that's the thing that people, before they even get into the industry, they do suffer for it. They do like go without meals. They do like work 12 to 14, 16 hours a day because they're passionate about the project. And then bringing all of that energy in and just sort of assuming like, well, surely you're going to continue to work like that. And exactly, like exploiting the this sort of idea of just like the project is an important thing. We're creating this and you have to suffer in order for that to exist. I feel like the industry gets away with it more.
When I went to film school, they just like taught us that. They're like, yeah, mm-hmm. You're going to stand for 14 hours. That's just part of the thing. So they would like have us just like practice standing an hour still holding like a boom mic. Just like, yeah, you're going to do this. Like that's mm-hmm. just part of the thing.
Garrison. That's wild. That's like film school PE.
yeah so like it's wild. They're just training you to do it
right, because yeah, like, because you're when you want to do that kind of stuff, you do that yeah. anyway.
If you're passionate about it, then you have to get it in, yeah, because that's the yeah. that's your dream.
We're laughing, well, but that's horrible.
Yeah.
no it's not fun.
I think what, internalized capitalism too, this idea of how hard we have to work. I want to get back to IATSE, but this whole conversation makes me think about the broader conversation culturally that we're having and we'll be having more of, I think and hope in the near future, is of the 4-day work week. Mm. And how actually when you provide enough time for people to live their lives and be healthy human beings, you get more work done more efficiently and a better product. And you're seeing that around the world. And the battle is fighting against this narrative that we have to work. We have to push it. And like that is to be celebrated, that this is to the glorification of the overworking. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Well, and so much of it is about squeezing as much labor as you can out of every worker without, you know, giving them pay for that. Like one thing I've really learned throughout just my time in the industry is that a lot of these jobs in these negotiations are treated as totally replaceable. Yeah. You know, you're like, if you're a grip and you want to take a day off, we'll find another grip. But the reality is that like, I don't know how to be a grip. Like, do any of you know how to be a grip? Like, no. They're going to find someone off the street who's going to be a grip. Like I can barely lift myself out of my chair, let alone 60-pound lights, but there's this idea that you're so replaceable. And if you ask for anything above the bare minimum, they'll find somebody else to take your job because everybody wants to work in Hollywood. The reality is I know more people leaving the industry than coming here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because of the way we treat people.
Yeah. It eats people up. Yeah.
And to your point, these aren't just replaceable people. That's a skilled trade. It's a talent. And it takes a lot of time and effort and training to be good at it.
You can't be a grip without like 2 years of training.
Right. I personally love to see a production where they just hire scab, makeup, hair, grips, DPs, writers, the whole works.
And see how it goes.
Truly, because at the end of the day too, if IATSE goes on strike, I think the studios would lose more money than they would if they just gave us everything we wanted, which is like an extra couple of bucks an hour and bathroom breaks.
Right.
Yeah. God. I mean, yeah. So some of the other things that you guys are talking about, living wages, that seems reasonable. Mm. I know that that's tricky for negotiating because you've got a whole bunch of different types of jobs here. I would love to talk about new media as well.
Yeah, that's been really interesting. New media obviously has been around for decades.
It's not really new, is it? But we still call it new media.
Yeah, it's become mostly an excuse to just underpay people for something that's pitched as like a scrappy little startup when, you know, most of these companies have more money than God. Netflix is part of the basic agreement, but there's a lot of other new media places that aren't. And I think the argument that we've been hearing a lot is that new media is an experiment and we don't know if it'll pay off. But
it makes my blood boil when I hear that sentence a little bit. Like, sorry, go ahead.
No, but I mean, it's like Betamax was an experiment and that lasted like 15 years. So should we just exploit people the whole 15 years that we have?
Also, at what point does new media stop being an experiment?
Right.
Cody and I, separate from this show, have an entire company based around a YouTube show that, you know, people watch on their televisions. One of the biggest production houses is like Netflix and Hulu, Amazon Prime. They're massive. They're not some scrappy little upstart. Mm-hmm. And as for other places that are making low budget internet content, I'm sure that that is another part of the negotiations that's own separate thing. In SAG, we have ultra low budget agreements for different types of projects. So there's absolutely no reason why you should be looking at new media and trying to fit it under a one-stop deal, right? I don't know. It's just
really, honestly, the only thing that the thing I've been thinking a lot about is how most of the new media places that are hesitant to embrace these things see themselves as like disruptors in the industry. And what that means is that they're backed by like tech companies, they're backed by VC funding. And more often than not, they're totally not generating the profits that they thought they would. Mm-hmm. And they want to stay in this business, you know, continuing to squeeze as much content as they can to recoup their losses. We've seen so much, you know, Quibi. They were like, we're going to have content that's too short for us to pay you union wages. Mm-hmm. Like that's basically what that was. There's a lot of that going on in new media. And I think that's going to be the biggest sticking point this time around, because if the corporations lose that, that's really the easiest way for them to be exploiting us. There's so many places that have new media arms that are traditional places too. Like so many of these companies are owned by just bigger companies too.
Right.
And all of them will be soon if they aren't yet.
They're finding loopholes to make things like that, that are like, well, it's a TV show you're making and you're calling it new media.
All the while that this is happening, I feel like I'm just constantly inundated with headlines about how well the companies are doing. Mm-hmm. You're like, everybody's home because it's COVID. Everybody's getting a Netflix subscription. We're making record profits. Mm-hmm.
And that's such a good point, because what you're making all that money and they're producing things again. We're shooting things again. And every person that we've discussed today is showing up to set and they're putting themselves at risk to make a TV show so you can watch it at home. And I've shot a couple things during COVID, and it's not fun. It is hard. Like, it is 50 times harder. And it's hard to test. It's hard to coordinate where people go. It's hard to be lifting things and moving around with masks. Everybody's stressed. It's where do you sit to have your own space? Where it's incredibly complicated. And so while they're making all of this money, you're putting your workers at risk and keeping them in absurdly long hours and not paying them enough.
That's the thing. You know, I have a friend who works at a studio who mentioned to me that something that they were talking about on a business affairs call recently about this was that IATSE is using COVID as an excuse to make it seem like this is a problem when it's not. And it's wild to me because I'm on set right now. Like, we wear masks every day. We test every other day. It's grueling. We haven't had a single COVID outbreak, and it's really hard. But at the same time, if you look at like the LA County list of office outbreaks, it's like all TV shows. Mm-hmm. Young Sheldon had like 29 COVID outbreaks last year.
Well, that's because Kims are filled with germs.
Completely. It's totally, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And the least we are asking for is protections during this time. And even that, it's like, you know, but we need to make TV. And I think one thing that's really unique about IATSE is that when the WGA went on strike, there was kind of a backlog of content that people could still shoot. You know, scripts that were written can be shot and edited and aired. Now, basically everybody involved in the process is gone. If we go on strike, I truly think that the entire industry would grind to a halt.
It absolutely
would. I don't see how it wouldn't, right? Like, it's almost everybody.
You would think that that's incredible leverage right now. So it is disappointing, I will say, that, you know, you're currently at a situation where they seem very far away from where you guys are.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea. You know, they're not legally allowed to talk to members about what's happening in negotiations. So it's really, you're putting a lot of faith in your union leadership.
Yeah.
But it's nice for me, at least, it's reassuring to know that there are like 12 different union leaders all there in that room, because they're all standing together. I like to imagine that there's like one studio guy who's just really scared.
I think there's more than one. Yeah, I mean, the picture you're painting is pretty inspiring too, of how everybody is coming together and, you know, the magnitude of what this would be as the first, you know, industry-wide strike from IATSE. Do you know, have any timeline as to when they think that they might start coming to some decisions?
You know, I don't know. Now that the contract has expired, it's anybody's guess. They can keep extending negotiations. But obviously a strike authorization is also a big deal. So, and there's a bunch of unions involved. So it might take some time for that to even happen. I don't think we're going to strike like tomorrow, but maybe by the time this airs, we'll be on strike. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, do you have anything else to add that we should know about this right now? Some other hot details? Salacious tidbits?
Yeah,
salacious
tidbits. To think of salacious
juicy tidbits. Goss?
No, there's just not that much goss.
You don't have to. This has also been wonderful.
I'm personally looking forward to getting a Scabby the Rat costume and standing outside of Fox for 12 hours a day if this happens.
I'll come help. I'll come
You'll
support.
Have bathroom breaks.
Yeah, at least you'll have some bathroom breaks.
Olga,
it was really nice chatting with you. We are going to be following this closely and maybe invite you back in the future as this develops and if he felt comfortable and wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
And go ahead and plug yourself online if you want for our listeners, if they wanted to follow you.
For sure. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at runalgarun.com. No, at runalgarun. I'm going to read you that. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at runalgarun. Should you want any hot goss? I know. As soon as the negotiations end, we're allowed to spit out all the goss. So
great, we'll circle back.
Yeah, just for that.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything's so dumb, 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 dumb.
Thank you, Olga, again for joining us. Keep.
Oh, man.
Keep on keeping on.
Keep on holding back your labor, hopefully. Yeah. Actually, well,
are we just running with that? All right.
Yeah, I mean, like, speaking of labor stuff, actually, in Portland, starting in like August 10th, was the Nabisco strike that is still ongoing and has spread to other cities.
Such a good point.
That's still happening.
We definitely should have talked about that by now.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you have on the show already, but yeah, it's the first major strike since 1969 for specifically Nabisco. It's spread to like five other major cities. Started here in Portland. You know, we got
the whole Danny
DeVito thing happened last month. With Twitter unverifying him after he's tweeted out support. We've had, you know, senators like Bernie Sanders and, you know, a lot of other people, including Oregon's ones, you know, support the strikers. Portland police have come out and, you know, taken away strikers. Nabisco has hired like an armed security force to harass, and they've actually started attacking people who are striking. But this is a still ongoing thing, right? It's been going on for over a month now. And yeah, we'll see what happens.
I think, yeah, so very good to keep in mind. I don't have it in front of me, but you guys should look this up and just check out all the different brands and companies that are owned by Nabisco because it's a lot.
Oreo, Chips Ahoy, Ritz Crackers. Mm-hmm. A lot of these snack foods are just like the Frito-Lays thing from, you know, earlier this year. A lot of these companies are the same company.
Yeah, so do your due diligence. I'm really hungry, and listing off all these foods
Katie,
I can't
eat. Also, don't eat Newtons, don't eat Wheat Thins, don't eat Triscuits, don't eat Rice Thins, don't eat Belvita, don't eat Teddy
Crackers. You're making me so hungry. I have to go snack.
Saltine crack. They own so fuck.
It's a lot.
Maybe
this is part of all the same problems, just like supply chains of making all of these same things reliant on so many different parts.
Yep.
Because they're all the same company and the same problem.
Yep. Anyways.
And the walls come tumbling down. And the walls come tumbling.
I want Katie's energy today. It's infectious.
Let me just Google this.
Anyways, you can follow us at Worst Year Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow at Cool Zone Media on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow Garrison at Hungry Bowtie. You can follow Cody at Dr. Mr. Cody. You can follow Katie at Katie Stoll. I'm Sophie. You can't follow me.
Whoa, okay, all
just
right.
Kidding, just hey. Kidding.
Okay.
Just kidding. At Y underscore Sophie underscore Y.
There we go.
And Katie, do you have a final song for us?
Where's Katie? What happened to Katie? Oh,
okay. I'm like, Katie, you have a final song for us?
You put me on the spot. You just put me on the spot.
You put yourself on the spot.
I put myself on the spot. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. No, you don't do it like that. You just say the words.
Okay. Good day, sunshine. Good day.
Good day, sunshine.
Good day, sunshine.
End of show.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.